to save the day.
Welcome to Mighty House. This is a radio show for people with problems.
Home improvement problems, that is.
And for people who want common sense guidance on how to build green and live a more sustainable lifestyle. If you have a home improvement hang-up, help is on the way. You can send an email or call into the show. The Mighty House crew is now on the job. This is
Mighty House.
I am Ron Cowgill. The Mighty House team is back. We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts and previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. And find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And you can give us a call, 773-763-9278. The Small Business Advocacy Council, the SBAC, is a nonpartisan, member-driven organization that promotes the success of small business through political advocacy, networking, support services, and educational programs. The SBAC is dedicated to improving economic conditions for small to mid-sized businesses and being a voice for small business. For more information, you can visit them at sbacil.org. That's sbacil.org. And with that, bring you guys in there, and there we go. We have a full house now.
We do.
This is very cool. So we are joined by here now. We've got Chris and Mark from Alternative Fuel Supply. I was calling it Alternative Energies.
Oh, my gosh. You're killing me.
Oh, I know. How about you? I went online last night to get some info on the company for the interview, and all I got for alternative energy was solar panels and wind turbines up the butt.
I am doing the same thing. Try Googling alternative energy in Schaumburg, and you get a million things that aren't their company.
Right. Try Alternative Fuel Supply.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, that comes right up with their website.
See, thanks for the free advertising. Mark,
you know, we were at an SBAC meeting. Mark says, "Hey, can I come in and we'll talk?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, no big deal." You know, and I think it was on an email somewhere that you just called it on alternative energies or something like that, or that's what I picked it up on. So, but it's really Alternative Fuel Supply.
Correct.
It is.
All right. So altfuelsupply.com.
That is correct.
Unbelievable.
All right. Pull that mic up to you there, Chris.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Okay, there you go. So you want to talk really,
you gotta
get it really close.
Get it right in there.
All right.
Okay, so what is Alternative Fuel Supply then?
So essentially what we do, countries all over the world, pretty much everywhere outside of the United States, run vehicles on propane, just like they do on gasoline or diesel fuel. And propane has a lot of benefits, especially compared to gasoline. It's a lot safer. It's a lot cleaner, about 70% cleaner than gasoline. And it's a heck of a lot cheaper too, on top of it. And so that's, you know, one of those things that we haven't really embraced in the United States, mostly because of, you know, long-term policies, subsidizing oil companies and things like that. But now that, you know, we're starting to have an eye on the environment and not just trying to, you know, keep a little extra money in our pockets. A lot of people are starting to look at this and say, maybe this is something that I should be pursuing.
But is there, where do you go to fill up then? I mean, you're talking about converting your cars to natural gas or to propane?
So, yeah, propane. We also do natural gas. They're two separate products. They're, you know, just different chemicals, essentially. But
they both burn.
But they both burn. And they both burn a heck of a lot cleaner than gasoline. But, so basically what we do and what makes us really unique is that right now in the industry, there are propane suppliers, people like AmeriGas and Suburban Propane. There are people who make propane dispensing systems for vehicles, and there are people who make propane conversion kits.
Okay.
What we've done is we've actually created, through some creative financing and, a lot of elbow grease, really. We've created a model in which we can work with corporate and municipal fleet vehicles to convert them, provide the fueling station, and provide the fuel, and do all of that for that corporate or municipal fleet, and not charge them any money up front to do so. Essentially, we get paid back by the gallon. That's how our business model works. So now you're burning a fuel that's much cleaner and much cheaper than gasoline. They still save about 50 cents a gallon, plus they receive a 36 cent per gallon tax incentive from the IRS on top of it. So you're saving almost a dollar a gallon on fuel. You don't have to spend any money to do it.
I'd have to say that it'd add up.
I was just thinking of the police departments.
Yeah, we work with a lot of police departments.
Those cars are running 24 hours a day.
Yes, sir, they are. We already have Oswego and Elmwood Park up and running. Mm-hmm. We're coming up with Franklin Park, Orland Park, Melrose Park, and then Winnebago County Sheriff's Department up in Wisconsin in the Oshkosh area.
Okay, I'm going to cut to the chase.
Sure.
Take a breath.
Okay. Can you tell I've done this before? Talking too much.
Yeah. Oh, okay. We're not your typical radio show. We have a little thing that says we're morons, basically.
No, we don't have that at all.
We do.
We're not ordinary people. We're morons.
See? There you go. So breathe.
Or is this going to be Robbie's question of the week?
Yeah,
that's funny. Robbie's moment of the week. We're morons, basically.
I'm here to ask a question that's really dum-de-dum-dum-dum-dum-de-dum-dum.
No, my question really was take a breath.
Sure.
So you are installing a gas station at the corporate location.
Well, so we do it a couple of different ways. We do it a couple of different ways. It's a 6-foot by 20-foot above ground tank with a dispensing unit on it. So it doesn't take up a lot of space. It's about the size of 2-3 parking spots with bollards surrounding it, right? And they're pretty nice looking. So one of the things we can do is we can either put it on the client's premises, in their back of their parking lot or something like that, or we'll go to a gas station nearby and actually place our fueling station at that gas station. Gas station owners love it because then they get all that fleet traffic every day because they make their money in the convenience store,
Selling coffee and donuts.
Exactly.
Clever.
And so we do that.
And the added protection of always having police cars in front of your...
There you go. That's important, too.
It doesn't hurt.
And what's really nice about our systems is that they're key fob activated. So you can actually access them with a key fob, and any of our fueling stations anywhere in the country, you can go up to it. I can pull the key fob out of my pocket, scan it, and it'll know that it's me. And you could do that with any of our cars. So essentially, the goal there by putting them at the gas stations is to make them shared use, which means that now not only do you have fleets in various places that are all running on propane, but they can all use each other's stations. So you're starting to build a network of stations, which is actually pretty cool. And the fuel tracking of it is pretty neat as well.
Can I ask a simple question? And propane is a product from making gasoline through refining.
Yeah, that's correct.
Am I correct? And then obviously natural gas is coming from the ground.
Right.
So I know propane burns dirtier than natural gas. However, my concern is to get natural gas to where it's cheap like it is fracking. And since we're now having earthquakes in Kansas, a place where there's no known fault lines, and fracking is so bad, are you really modeling towards propane more than natural gas?
Yes, we are. And we're also modeling towards it for economic reasons as well. Fracking scares the heck out of me, if I'm being frank. I'll be honest.
Your name's Chris, so you can't be frank.
Sorry.
Yeah. We do model towards propane rather than natural gas for economic reasons. The fueling infrastructure for natural gas is on the low end about $750,000, and on the high end close to $2 million.
Okay.
The fueling infrastructure for propane is somewhere between $40,000 and $60,000. So okay. When you're talking to a client who's using a couple thousand gallons of fuel per vehicle per year, as your contractors are or your police officers are or whatever, it makes a lot more sense to go with that option because your return on investment is so much higher.
Right. Okay.
That's good. That's actually good to hear because that's you got the whole line of where I was heading is, the only way to stop fracking is to make it where nobody wants your fuel anyway.
Right. So supply and demand. Right.
Supply and demand. So if propane can become the winner,
right,
then, natural gas, we're only going to use that for cooking and baking, and then we don't need to do the fracking.
Right. And we're talking to Chris and Mark. Mm-hmm. From Alternative Fuel Supply.
Yes.
Now, we've been talking fleets and stuff. Mark, can we use this? Can I just put this on my wife's car?
Yes, you can.
And then she'd need a gas station at your house.
Well, no.
A propane station.
No, she'd have a key fob that she could go to different places.
Right. Well, our stations that we're putting up are being used by the corporate and as well as public. So we call them private public fueling stations, and we have a few of those around. And as we get bigger, we'll have more. But that'll open it up to anybody that uses right now between 30 and 35 gallons of gas a week, a place to go fill up in their area, plus save money on the fuel. Mm-hmm. And we have kits for approximately 650 different models of cars and trucks and fleets.
So. Hey, Ron, I'm pretty sure your wife's Volt's not going to use 35 gallons a week.
It doesn't use 35 gallons a year.
So now you're at the question that I always ask, because now we're talking consumer as opposed to just this big fleet thing. Cool. So if I want to convert my car, how much does it cost to convert my car?
Well, so there's one thing that Mark didn't touch on. There are two different kinds of conversion kits. There are EPA certified kits and non-EPA certified kits. If you install a non-EPA certified kit on a vehicle, it's considered tampering. It invalidates your manufacturer's warranty, et cetera.
Right, we're not getting that one.
We're not doing that, right. The EPA certified kits, obviously, you can put on. They don't invalidate warranties or anything like that, which is good. The problem is that the people who make the conversion kits only certify, the types of kits that they're going to sell a lot of. So you're talking about your Ford F-150, 250, 350s, your E-Series, your, all of your police interceptors, same thing with the Chevy equivalents, the Dodge equivalents, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to make a kit for a Toyota Corolla. And the reason why is because they need to sell a lot of kits to make up for the fact that they spend $250,000 for every kit that they have to get certified by the EPA. So the EPA says, hey, we want you to start embracing alternative fuels, but they also throw up these huge regulatory roadblocks at the same time where they could definitely simplify that process and, not make it cost quite so much money, which would make more kits more available to consumers
at a more economical way.
So let's say,
taking a deep breath.
Okay. Thank you. So let's say it works for my car.
Yes.
How much?
About $6,500 installed.
Okay. And then how much am I paying for the propane?
If you were to pay that up front, probably about $1.17 a gallon.
Okay.
And the nice thing is you could park next to your grill and fire it up.
There you go.
So is it an either-or situation, or if there's not a propane station near me, can I use gas?
This is why I like you. You ask the good questions. I want to hear that Robbie's question of the week jingle again. That was pretty.
Thank you.
No, but they're not dumb questions. She's actually nailing it. Yes.
Thank you, Reg. That's the question that's really dum-de-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
No, that's amazing. To answer your question, they're bi-fuel systems, which means we don't take the gas, we don't mess with the gasoline system at all. We add a separate tank, a separate fuel line, and a separate set of injectors, and an engine control unit that talks to the existing engine control unit. And it basically just says, if I'm going to put in this much propane, you're going to put in this much gasoline, that kind of thing, right? So they run on propane. Or they run on gasoline. If you run out of propane, even if you're going 70 miles an hour on the highway,
it'll switch over
automatically. And then when you go to a propane station, you fill up again, it'll switch over automatically. It's just a pressure system.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's interesting.
So I drove my car.
I got to get some pictures.
There you go.
Uh-huh.
I drove my car down to Louisville, Kentucky back in July for a long weekend with my girlfriend and ran out of propane a little past Indianapolis. And, drove the rest of the way on gasoline. And then when I got home on Monday morning, I went and filled up at our station in Des Plaines right by the airport. And it was running on propane again. So it's, literally either or. It's completely seamless.
I assume this is liquid propane. So how many gallons are you putting in there? What size tank's going in on average?
It depends on the vehicle. What we do is we usually size them to the tank that's on there.
My F-250.
On your F-250, we could put probably either a 17 or a 21-gallon tank.
Okay, so it's not huge. And then are you putting – this got to be inside the frame rails then too.
So we'll either put it in place of the spare tire, or in the case of a pickup truck, we can actually put it underneath where the toolbox is on a lot of work trucks. We can actually put it under there and then lift the toolbox.
Excellent. All right. Yeah. We got to take a quick break. You stick around for a minute?
Sure.
All right. We'll be back right after this. You're listening to
Mighty House.
This is Mighty House.
Mighty House will return.
This is Mighty House with Ron Cowgill.
Answering all of your toughest questions about home repair.
Get all your answers from the experts. This is Mighty House.
We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts or previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. And you can find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. And coming up at 9:40, we have the Mighty House Greenhouse, sponsored by Devon Bank. I've been a Devon Bank customer for over 25 years, and they're great people to work with. They're locally owned, independent, and committed to our communities since 1945. And for more information, go to DevonBank.com. That's DevonBank.com. All right, Robbie?
Yes?
Chris is, like, going crazy, so... Did you give him some downers or something to relax him? take his coffee away?
Well, what we found out during the break.
Yes.
He's going to the Cubs game tonight.
Oh, so he's like wound up.
Do you have those tickets on you?
No, I do not.
Smart move.
All right. We held Chris and Mark over there from Alternative Fuel Supply. And, okay, so we've been talking about converting our fleets, our trucks or vans, whatever, over to propane.
That's correct.
And what that does is it saves us money on our fuel costs per year, correct? Mm-hmm. It burns cleaner.
Yep.
And so emissions are going to be a lot better.
Yep.
So now that they're taking all the emissions testing centers out of Chicago, do we still need to go get our cars tested with this?
The last time I had to take a car with a propane kit on it to get emissions tested, they stuck the meter on there and they said, wait a second, what's going on here? And so I took the guy around back and I showed him the fuel tank and everything like that. And he goes, oh, you're good. You don't even need to get it tested.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, no, you don't have to.
Nice. So, okay, go back to cost again. On your website, it says that, you know, for fleets, there's like little to no upfront cost. So, obviously, you're going to set up a fueling station at a corp headquarters or yard, whatever, okay, wherever mm-hmm. it's most convenient. That cost to convert their fleet, each of the vehicles you said could be up to $6,500 a vehicle. Are you fronting that also?
Yes, we are. So we cover that cost and the cost of the cost of the fueling infrastructure. And then what we do is we sign a contract with them for, you know, 3-4 years that they will buy propane fuel from us, and they're going to use X amount of gallons per year based on whatever they're using in gasoline. We just, you know, rate it for the same efficiency in terms of BTUs, and then they're going to use X amount in gallons per year over that term, and then we get paid back whatever, 15 cents, 20 cents on the gallon, something like that.
Sure.
But how are you getting back the $6,500?
We're getting paid back on that over that term, that 3-4 year contract term for
the
fuel.
Okay, so they're buying...
That's the hard part of the business model. Seriously, there's some serious math involved here because you're talking about the infrastructure. The $6,500 per vehicle could be 40 vehicles. I mean, but obviously with 40 vehicles, you're going to use a lot of fuel, so you're going to get it. So say he's making 15 cents a gallon, he's only really making, you know, maybe 3 cents a gallon profit if he's lucky.
Well,
so, whatever. You know what I mean? Because you got all this money outlaid that you got to recover.
Well, before we get too into the weeds on that kind of stuff,
we don't need to.
Right. I mean, really what ends up mattering is that, you know, we're making our money on every gallon, but they're not spending any money up front to do it. So there really is no ROI at all.
There's no return on investment.
Because they're not investing anything.
Right.
Correct.
So it's no different than signing a 3-year contract with the cell phone company and they give you the cell phone.
Correct. Correct.
It's the same principle.
Which they don't do anymore.
Well.
No, I'm just saying, you know, it's just kind of.
But that's that you can still get I don't know which Sprint or whatever. You go in there, they'll give you a basic phone.
Hmm. Okay, so if I'm a consumer, though, and I don't have a fleet, mm-hmm. do I have to pay up front?
We don't do business to consumer at this point.
For individuals?
Yeah. We don't do individuals at this point. There's too much other stuff going on. There's too many variables. Plus, most consumers don't really drive that many miles. I mean, we're looking for people who are doing 25, 30,000 miles a year, which your police cars and your service vans and delivery trucks are doing. Now, at some point in the eventual future, I do think that this is going. There's going to be a consumer-based model for this. It's just not something that we want to get into just yet. But you can
build out that infrastructure using fleet vehicles and then apply it to this individual.
That is phase two.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So then also, we're talking about converting gasoline engines over to propane.
That's correct.
Can you convert diesel engines over to propane?
We can't convert diesel engines without actually rebuilding them pretty much from the engine up. Okay. That's actually probably more a question for Mark than it is for me.
Yeah. No. We don't convert diesel.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I know they have propane kits for diesel to help with the efficiency. So they still use diesel and then they feed in the propane also.
Dual fuel kits, which actually work pretty well. It's just a question of how you're going to make your money back because you can't really judge how much propane you're using versus how much diesel.
Yeah. No, but if they were thinking about it, you could do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, because, right now we're on the air in Chicago, but we can this, and it goes nationwide and everything, but do you travel?
Yes, we do. We just signed a national contract with Federal Express, so we're coming up with them right now in Chicago. Once we're done with them here, we're going to be going to Kansas City and then Buffalo. But we have national contracts with all of our suppliers on the kit side, the fueling infrastructure side, and on the fuel side, so we can go anywhere in the world. Or anywhere in the country, really.
Real. All right, we got a phone call for you real quick. Let's go to Jeanette in Chicago. Hey, Jeanette, you're on Mighty House. Thanks for hanging on.
Oh, you're very welcome. Good morning, everybody. The question I have, and you might have answered it already, is I have relatives in Europe, and you can buy a car from a dealer that already has this. And the question is, what will it take to get that to happen here?
Go ahead, Mark.
Go ahead.
You can do that right now. Ford 150s all the way up to 650s offer a propane engine on the brand new Ford trucks.
It's just an option. You can sign up. Right.
So
the problem with that, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
The problem with that is that you can either run it on propane. If you buy one of the trucks that Mark's talking about, it only runs on propane, which means that if you're out of range of a gasoline or a propane station, you're kind of out of luck. So the goal is eventually to kind of try to start pursuing these bi-fuel systems until propane infrastructure on a national scale becomes prevalent.
Right. Okay. So if you have a company here in Chicago that is only running your vehicles in Chicago and you have a fueling station, you can fill them up every night. But if you're going to be driving around and out of the state, then you have a problem with that, is what Chris is saying.
I see. And so it's just that probably Europe was easier to set up that way because people in Europe these are home vehicles, personal vehicles that they're not putting that many miles on. So it's not going to be out there for the consumer for a while, it sounds like.
Probably not.
You also have to understand that Europe does not subsidize the oil industry like we do here. So when you're paying $10 a gallon for gasoline, propane becomes a very easy choice.
Mm-hmm.
Where in this country, we're keeping gas cheap, so it doesn't make any sense to spend any money to do something different, whether it's hydrogen, electric, whatever.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but that's the reality of it.
Yep. Yep. There you go.
Well, thanks so much. Have a great day.
All right, thanks, Jeanette.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. So
that's probably a good point because everybody sees that. Europe is always way ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a financial reason for it, though.
Yeah. So the fueling stations we talked about, is there a mileage difference? So if I was to fill up with 20 gallons of gasoline, am I going to go just as far with 20 gallons of propane?
You will go.
Or do I have to...
Good question.
Or do I have to...
dyno the vehicle. Yeah.
No, you're going to go a little bit less far than you would go on 20 gallons of gasoline. It's about a 90% efficiency rating. That's what we use in our proposals. Okay. Realistically, on vehicles that we're actually testing, we're getting closer to 92, 93%. But really, I mean, if you've got a truck that's getting 10 miles to the gallon, you're getting 9 miles to the gallon on propane. So it's not that big of a difference for them, and the savings more than makes up for it.
Right. And I've noticed city buses have been, like, converting over to this, too, correct? All the Pace buses are now running on it, right?
Well, so the Pace and I think some of the CTA buses are actually running on CNG.
Oh, okay.
Which makes sense because they're larger diesel engines, right? But we're actually working with Pace right now on a pilot program to do one of their smaller shuttle buses. You know, mm-hmm. you see the little E450 platform ones? Mm-hmm. And so we're actually working on one of those right now. They've been testing it now for about 2 months. They've got another 30 days or so. And then we hope to hear from them. We know that they're already very satisfied with it. We hope to hear from them that they want to convert their 750 shuttle buses. That would be nice. That'd be really nice. We should be finding out about that right around Christmas time.
That'd be good.
if somebody now, okay, so we just bought a truck. It's got 120,000 miles on it. You know, we're going to be running it around. Should I convert this over and convert that vehicle over to it? Or is this really only if you buy a brand new vehicle, then you can apply it to a brand new vehicle? Or if you've got a fleet of, you know, trucks that already have maybe 100 or 150,000 on them, mm-hmm. can you convert those?
Well, so, I mean, truthfully, every fleet is in transition. Okay, you're gonna. I mean, you've got trucks. You know, guy. You know, random. You know, guy with his fleet of vehicles. Right, has trucks that go back to whatever 2008, 2010, and then he's got some that he bought in 2012. 99s,
right? A couple 99s. I've got.
There are, man. You'd be amazed. I've seen some stuff. Uh-huh. And so what we do when we're putting together a proposal is we figure out who, you know, which of these vehicles is using the most fuel, which ones make the most sense to convert. You know, you're not going to convert the truck that's got 150,000 miles on it if the guy cycles them out at 150,000 miles. It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But if you've got one that's got 40 or 80, then, you know, you're going to make your money back over that 70,000 miles, no problem.
We run them until the floors fall out of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And some people do. And some people don't, but a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Well, I would think you still have a technology problem, too, right? If you're doing a dual-fuel system, the ECM has to be compatible. And if you don't have either a throttle body injection or direct injection or multi-point injection, how do you set the system up? So I think you're too many variables there, just under the hood.
Well, and so that's we don't handle that stuff. Basically, we have our conversion companies who actually assemble. You know, they put together these kits, and those kits are designed for every engine model. So we're talking about mostly manifold injected vehicles. We're doing a little bit with direct injection. That's something that's kind of coming up, but it's not actually happening yet. Okay. At least not on a consumer level.
What do you think about converting a 57 Chevy to propane?
I think that's cool.
I think we could do that.
Yeah, I think so.
You get a little extra horsepower bump, too, because it's 105 octane, and it has refrigerant properties, so it cools the manifold when you inject it.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah.
Send me the guy down here. And the car in. Get rid of them big, juicy dual quads. Go to a single four barrel and put some propane to this baby.
Yeah.
So, and on the same line, you're going to be cutting your oil changes in half because at 105 octane, you're running very, very. You're basically cutting out the carbon that's that you get built up in the gas engines.
Right.
And I don't have my pre-ignition knock like.
Could you just go fill up anywhere? You know, there are places where you go to fill up your propane tanks for your gas grills and stuff like that. Can you go to any one of those places and fill up, though?
Well, so...
Because they're all over the place, especially when you get out in the country. AmeriGas is everywhere.
No, because that's how they're making their money.
So, technically, no.
Okay.
just no. No.
But, I mean, propane is propane. Mm-hmm. The nozzle is different. The auto gas nozzle versus the gas grill tank nozzle is different.
So they make a piece to convert that over.
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing is that if you go to, you know, an AmeriGas station or a U-Haul or something like that, they're going to charge you $3.50 a gallon for propane, which is ridiculous.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I'd suggest going to us instead.
Ah, okay. Well, that's fine. All right.
So, like, if you ran out of gas, you just got to walk to the closest Blue Rhino and put the 15-pound cylinder in the trunk.
That's the plan. I might actually have to do that on my way home. Stop off at 7-Eleven and grab a Blue Rhino tank.
There you go.
Excellent. All right. Well, cool. Again, we're talking to Chris and Mark from Alternative Fuel Supply. And if somebody's got a fleet or what, and what's a fleet? Is it 5 vehicles? Is it 10?
It can be any amount of vehicles. Really, if you've got one vehicle that's using a lot of fuel, and you're near one of our fueling stations, then, you know, you're a perfect candidate for us.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Limo drivers, you know, people like
definitely
that.
Definitely got to get some more information.
Uber drivers, people that are using a lot of gas, mm-hmm. we'd be more than happy to talk with them.
Okay. And contact information?
You can reach us at www.altfuelsupply.com. My email is listed on that site. Our phone number is 847-380-2027. And we are officed in Schaumburg.
Oh, right here, local.
Yep.
Schaumburg.
Schaumburg.
And we did post the information on mightyhouse.net if anybody wants to check it out there.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome.
It's probably on the Facebook, I would guess, too, right?
Yes.
It is. Okay.
I'm sorry. That's what I actually meant. I meant Facebook.
This is pretty cool, and I've talked to Mark at plenty of SBAC meetings. It's something that I'd like to do. I think Mark came and gave us analysis, and our fleet was too old, so it just didn't make sense for it. But it's definitely something to look into if you've got.
It will in the next couple of years, because you're going to have to rotate some of them old things you've got there.
Yeah,
that
and I'm trucks. Pushing them to do it sooner than later.
Yeah, yeah. The old dogs are starting to fall apart. So
Chubb needs to go.
Yeah, well, that's a 99. There's no floor left in that one. But
roofers are a good client for us, because we do even have a nozzle fulfill their 100-pound tanks that they use to
for their
putting their tire down
for their hot tar stuff.
Yep. Also, food trucks. We've already talked to a lot of food trucks, caterers, people like that, because they use propane. Obviously to cook their food, right? Mm-hmm. And so basically, if you convert the vehicle, now you're running the vehicle on propane and using a separate tank of propane to cook the food as well.
Excellent. All right, Chris and
Thanks,
Mark.
Thanks, guys. That's an awesome
yep.
couple yeah. of segments.
Alternative Fuel Supply and the website again?
www.altfuelsupply.com.
Altfuelsupply.com.
Fuel Supply.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. All right.
Thank
we'll
you.
Be back with a little gardening segment right after this. You're listening to
Mighty House.
This is Mighty House.
Mighty House will return.
This is Mighty House with Ron Cowgill.
Answering all of your toughest questions about home repair.
Get all your answers from the experts. This is Mighty House.
We're broadcasting worldwide and live at MightyHouse.net and TuneIn.com. Just look for Mighty House. Podcasts and previous shows available at MightyHouse.net, iTunes, SoundCloud, the GLN Network, and on HomeImprovementUSA.com. Find links to all of them at MightyHouse.net. Follow us on Facebook by looking for Mighty House Home Improvement Show. And our Twitter handle is at Mighty House. All right, there we go. I think we've got everybody settled in. And
yep. Let's see. Hey, Laura.
Wait. Let me see. You are here backwards. Okay, go.
Hello.
There we go. Nice. Chris from Alternative Energies. I think he was running on propane. That he's just...
Okay.
I think he was running on that coffee cake he brought, which was fabulous.
Yeah.
Really.
Excellent. All right. And again, for more information, just go to altfuelsupply.com. And we had like 15 more questions for him during the break there, Rich and I did.
Yeah, well, you're going to I've got his email address, actually. I'm going to start sending him now.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. All right.
Very.
Now we need to talk green.
Also cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah. All right.
Also cool stuff. All right.
Here's something.
Ron, did you run your garden over this week with the mower?
No. I was just
pack it up.
I was picking green beans and tomatoes yesterday. But here's something that's also very cool. The Mighty House Greenhouse is sponsored by Devon Bank, your home improvement financing experts. They're locally owned, independent, and committed to our communities since 1945. They're great people, and I personally recommend that you visit them online at devonbank.com. That's devonbank.com. There you go.
Were your tomatoes red?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, and I mean, a bunch of cherry tomatoes, and, you know, we had...
Oh.
Yeah. A bunch of
my tomatoes are still green, but they're a little red maybe, but I started harvesting them because I'm afraid they're going to freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And, the recommendation when they're green, if you don't want to eat them green, is to put them in a bag with a rotting piece of fruit, like an apple. Because when the fruit is rotting, it gives off this gas called ethylene gas that actually causes the tomatoes to ripen and turn red. I know, it's really cool.
Robbie's taking a look. Mr. Wizard, thanks for the chemistry lesson.
I know. I don't have my tomatoes in a bag, but I do have them in the same areas like bananas and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so it's basically doing the same thing, and they're turning red.
So do you ever just have fried green tomatoes?
You know, I tried that. I didn't really like them.
You know what
I
think
know
it
that
is? Because
I'm
with you. No, I'm with you. I'm not a big fan. Do you know what I think it is? I think the green tomato is just a delivery system for breading and oil, which does taste good.
Which happens to eggplant, too, sometimes, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't. I prefer to put them in a bag and ripen them up or put them with some fruit. So just a tip.
Yeah. Well, I actually had some that were over-ripened and were starting to go. So I just threw them back on the ground.
No, you could put them in your compost.
Why? I picked them. They were already starting to rot. So I just let them go. Drop them, and then they'll just.
If you just put them there, they'll just grow back in the spring.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
I'm turning
it back to the earth.
Yes, I am. Right where it grew.
Right. And speaking of returning things back to the earth, now is the great time of the year to think about planting your bulbs.
Bulbs.
Bulbs like tulips,
hyacinths, daffodils.
Yes.
70 waters.
Yeah. The new LED, 9 watt.
Yeah, no, you could put those into it. No, anyway, it's a great time to do that. And just a tip, you usually dig the hole for the bulb 1.5 times as deep as the bulb is tall. And
put it just so it breaks the surface a little bit, the squirrels can find them.
Yeah,
and dig them up.
You put them way down so that the squirrels can't find them, and the dig like a bigger hole and throw a bunch of bulbs in there rather than planting each one individually. That looks so fake. You want to try to create the effect of like a bouquet. So I would dig a hole big enough for at least 5 or 6 bulbs.
Just toss them in there.
I know people get really worried about making sure you're planting the right side of the bulb up.
Yes.
Not necessary.
Come on.
All the roots will grow down and the tip will grow up no matter what direction you put them in.
It mattered.
No. And okay. So in fact, if you kind of toss them in there and they're all different directions, you prolong your display, because if the pointy side is planted up, it emerges first. If the pointy side, which is the side that the flower comes out of, you plant it sideways, it emerges second. And if you plant the pointy side down, it takes longer for the pointy side to grow up out of the soil, and so you have flowers for a longer period of time.
I'm gonna question you on this.
You are welcome
and Rich too, right? Everything you've ever heard
says pointy side up. The biology of the bulb drives what the bulb's going to do, not the media.
So it's not going to grow.
It's going to grow. It's just going to take longer.
You mean Mother Nature didn't come along and make sure each one was pointed up exactly perfect?
No, Mother Nature did not do that. So you actually can plant them anyway.
That sounds like something I could do.
You could do that.
I could just throw them in a hole.
I think you should surprise everybody in your neighborhood by just going out there, planting a beautiful display. And
okay.
So what about irises? Those you don't plant deep. Those are not bulbs.
Well, irises aren't bulbs.
They're
rhizomes.
I never knew how to pronounce that. Rhizomes.
Yeah. And you don't plant them deep. Actually, they want to be real close to the surface so that you can see the top of them.
So the squirrels can find them easy.
You know, squirrels really like bulbs. And, that's a problem.
Uh-huh.
But some people find success putting, like, chicken wire over the bulbs before they backfill with soil. That's supposed to work. The other thing we were talking about last week is if you try to I mean, the squirrels are attracted to disturbed-looking soil. So if you try to put the soil back so it doesn't look like it was dug up, they're less
apt. Put the weeds back over the
top.
Yeah,
put the weeds on the top. They're less apt to go after that. Some people have sprinkled cayenne pepper on the bulbs in the hole before they plant them. You know.
Hot flowers.
You might have to put like a scope on the place where you planted them and monitor it 24 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
But none of those things should prevent you from planting bulbs, because in the spring, they're just so beautiful and they add a lot to the garden. The other thing, too, when bulbs come up in the spring and they're blooming, you really need to leave the leaves on them until the leaves turn yellow and they die off on their own. And that kind of bothers some people because of the fact that they can see these yellowing leaves happen. So when you're thinking about where you want to plant your bulbs, plant them someplace that the yellowing leaves will be camouflaged by other plants that would be coming up at the time.
Mm-hmm. Or you know, can you plant annuals over them?
You know, I guess I would be a little worried about that. If you water your annuals a lot and the bulbs are underneath, they might actually be getting too much water and they might rot. So you could do that. A lot of people also, after they bloom and they die back, they lift them out and store them someplace and plant them again in the fall, which you could do.
And why don't you just leave them alone?
You can. But that's the easiest way.
If you want to plant something else in that space.
But if you're planting perennials, that doesn't matter.
Right.
But again, I would just try to keep that in mind, that when these leaves are yellowing, it does bother people when they're seeing that, and that makes you want to cut them off. And cutting them off prevents the bulbs from obtaining all the nutrients it needs to store to be successful the next year. So, you know, let's say you're planting them in an area that normally you have hostas and things, put them behind the hostas so that the hostas are growing up and the yellowing leaves you can kind of push down underneath the hostas.
And hide them.
And hide them. And hide them. Yeah. And that way they won't bother you. They're just going to go there and they're going to, you know, do what they need to do, which is yellow and die back. And you'll have a healthier planting the following year.
How is your success with hyacinth bulbs? My hyacinths, I mean, I've been fine with tulips and daffodils. Hyacinths never come up like you see them in the store, like the big full thing. They always come up very pathetic looking.
You know, that actually happens to mine. What they end up doing is coming up smaller and smaller every year. Yeah, mine do that too. I kind of think that in our area, certain types of bulbs like hyacinths and some kinds of tulips, you really need to consider them to be annuals.
Mm-hmm.
And just realize that you're going to have to plant them year after year after year. And it's not a big investment to do that. Bulbs aren't horribly expensive. And the payback in terms of bringing you hope and joy in the spring is worth the amount of money you spend on the bulbs year after year after year. Well, so I have the same thing happen to my hyacinths. They're still pretty. They still smell, but they're not like those beefy hyacinths.
No, mine are just like lame.
Yeah,
really
mine
lame.
Are too. Well, they also do something. A lot of bulbs do things called naturalize, which means they actually form baby bulbs off the mother bulb, and that drains the energy from the mother bulb. So you end up getting a lot of spindly looking offspring instead of the main show bulb. It's just the nature of the beast.
And so you should dig those up, split them up. Is that it?
No, or just enjoy the little bulbs.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they might still bloom year after year. They're just not...
Spindly's fine.
Yeah, they're not that spectacular big hyacinth that you saw the first year.
And people need to know that gladiolas you can't overwinter, correct?
Correct. Gladiolas are... They're not bulbs, they're corms. And they do not overwinter. They're not hardy here. So you have to plant those year after year. But if you have a cutting garden, they're beautiful. And the other thing that is really nice, don't forget them, is allium bulbs.
Huh?
You see them coming up like in the summer. Did you ever, in early summer or late spring, you see people who have like these big
I love those.
Purple globe-looking things?
Yes.
Those are alliums or onion bulbs, and now's a great time to be planting those as well. And I started out with 10 in my garden. I now have 40. And they don't do the puny weird thing that the hyacinths do. They stay nice and magnificent, and they spread.
And they so those overwinter.
Yes, they overwinter, and they're absolutely beautiful. They add a lot to your perennial garden, and they dry beautifully, too.
Oh.
You know, so you can use them in an arrangement, a dried flower arrangement. You can keep them in the garden, and while they're dying back and drying, they still look nice.
Is there anything else that we should consider that we have to dig up? Dahlias, do you have to dig those up?
Dahlias, you have to dig up. They're not hardy here. And you need to wait for the first killing frost. So that because the upper part of the dahlia that's above the ground needs to experience some chill, and
Got
that's
it.
When you dig them up. Today we're doing a talk on pruning at Red's, 3460 Dundee Road in Northbrook, Illinois. Stop by and see us, or contact me at laura@redsgardencenter.com.
All right, thanks, Laura.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
We'll be back right after this.
This is Mighty House. Mighty House will return.